Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast. I'm Brian Dunn.
I'm Robert Hookman Jr.
And Robert, we are here to talk about the success of Spillers number 4 that just wrapped up.
The rousing success of Spillers number 4.
It really was. It was great. Crowd loved it. Crescent Ballroom did an amazing job with the room, I thought.
And this thing grows every single time. You know, it like keeps happening. This is only our fourth event, and it's bigger than the third, and the third was bigger than the second, and I just could not be happier with how this keeps turning out.
Absolutely.
I especially loved that this evening, the bar in the main ballroom was open.
Wasn't that great?
Which was a sure sign that we own the place now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think by Spillers 5 or 6, we'll have stock.
You think they'll give us stock?
I think they'll give us stock.
Nice. Well, one of the reasons that the event has grown is because of people like our guest right here. His name is David Wade. He read his original short story, Picture Perfect, tonight. David, thank you for being a guest on the podcast.
Oh, my God. It's a pleasure. And thank you guys for having me. I loved it.
Yeah, no, really absolutely. It was a great reading of the story. I called it a demented little tale, and I kind of stand by that.
You did. And you know what? Like, from what I know, David, you'd normally write historical fiction, right?
But
the story you read here seemed more like just outright transgressive fiction. And this was my first introduction to you. David and I met in a writer's group that we both go to, and he read his story, and I was halfway through it, and I was already writing, like,
apply
at spillers.net at the bottom of the page and handing it back to him because the story was just that strong. And it's literally only, what, like 800-850
That's
words, but
exactly right.
Man, you pack so much punch into that story, and it just blew me away. And I've heard, you know, other stories, David, that you've written since then, and they've just, you're at such an incredibly high level of writing, and it's just so impressive. And every time I hear you read a paragraph, I'm like, okay, that guy, I want to have him at Spillers. So it looks like I'm going to just keep inviting you back over.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Repeat Spiller.
You can read totally different genres, totally different stories every single time. And, and every time, everybody will be like, oh, wow, that was really great.
You've got range, David. I think that's what Robert is saying here. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your background, if we could here. I was so surprised to read your bio and find out that your background reads like a Sid Vicious biopic. I don't know what's going on there. You like grew up in some sort of punk scene in New York. Like, what? Take us through.
Well, so I really did grew up in the punk scene in Lower Manhattan. I grew up where I lived and grew up was on the corner of Crosby Street and Spring Street in Lower Manhattan. So it's Soho, basically. And both my parents were artists. My dad was an opera singer and my mom a painter. And, you know, I don't know, just at the time that I was there, it just happened to be that I hooked up with a lot of people who were in the punk scene, and I used to go to CBGB's all the time and Max's Kansas City and all the sort of kind of dive bars, basically, and, you know, see awesome bands. I really grew up with a lot of these guys, and you know, I started drawing posters. One of my really good friends, say, this is a weird story. So one of my really good friends was in a band, and he asked me to start drawing posters for him, right? And that was a hardcore band. Mm-hmm. And
and posters?
Yeah. Whenever they were doing a show, I would put together their posters. And this was a band that was, you know, again, hardcore at the time. They later changed, and this was the Beastie Boys, right?
Oh, the Beastie Boys.
It was the Beastie Boys. And I found one of my posters online at one point of this stuff. And I was thinking about how that when I was a kid, I complete dorko, right? I used to like be completely into, I mean, I was into the punk scene, but I was also into Dungeons and Dragons. And I remember one time having like this game of D&D where the people were around were, there was at least one guy from the Beastie Boys. There was a guy who became the lead singer of the Cro-Mags, which is a really sort of like hardcore band. Mm-hmm. And one of the woman who was the lead singer for Luscious Jackson was another band that was there. And it was all before they did that. But it was just like, it was a really like popping, energetic, creative environment. And it was great.
Now, wait a second. You're not saying that you played Dungeons and Dragons with these people?
Yes, that actually is what I'm saying.
David played D&D with Luscious Jackson.
He did.
Not with Luscious Jackson, the whole entire band, of course, but with one or two of them. Well, actually, it was one of the members. Jill Kniff was actually her name. So
That is very interesting. So your father was an opera singer. What did he think of the whole punk scene that you were into then? Was he...
You know, I think that he... was had the sort of the right attitude of like, you know, kids do crazy things and I'm not going to try to stand in the way of it because it's a juggernaut. And so he just kind of, you know, chilled out. Actually, for a while, he was working, you know, he was doing opera singing part time, but he was also working at a record company. And so as a result, we would get just like mounds of these sort of sample albums. And that's how I got exposed to reggae and blues and Cajun Zydeco and sort of all sorts of stuff that I just love. I'm a mad music fan.
Yeah, yeah. That is, wow, that is very cool. So, wow, the opera singer father. That's just so interesting to me was...
Yeah, that's like about as rebellious as you can get, right? Your dad's an opera singer and you go into the punk scene.
And you go into
the punk scene, right.
D&D with the Cro-Mags.
Interesting.
So, an interesting factoid that Brian seems to have come up with is that... Yeah? Did you used to sell electric toothbrushes?
And this is a fact.
And were they $326 a piece?
$326 per. Yeah.
Holy crap.
And also, why does the internet know about this?
Why does the internet know about this?
How does the internet know about this?
I don't know. Oh, well, I mean, I put it into my onto my website, but not just because I thought it was a funny thing. I went and I you know, worked for a while. It was called Dr. Woog's Perio System.
My God. Yeah. Best product name.
Absolutely.
Dr. Woog. Yeah. And it's a system.
Yeah, we're going to need the fact
check. You're not just buying a toothbrush here.
No.
You are buying a system.
A toothbrush
is like a $100 item. A system, you're paying $326.
You know what? If you're ever going to throw clout behind a system, it's going to be with a name like Dr. Woog.
Yeah, Dr. Woog.
There's no question about that, of course.
You've only got one course in your life if your name is Dr. Woog.
Oh, my gosh.
What was amazing about that job was that we actually never had to call anybody. It wasn't like we sat on the phones dialing people. What happened was the Dr. Woog Perio system was advertised in magazines and people would call us, right? And so then you would just talk them into buying a $326 toothbrush.
Oh my gosh.
There are some strange stories of people calling in from that, but it was fun. I actually kind of learned, you know, what goes into sales and
Is that something that you use today? The skills that you gleaned from selling Dr. Woog.
I think this is the most impressive part, is that it was incoming sales. It was inbound calls.
Evidently, Dr. Woog knows marketing.
Dr. Woog was a madman. this is the guy who actually he invented, I forget what it was, but there was like some toothbrush.
Did he invent the infomercial?
No, but he invented a toothbrush that was like the first electric toothbrush. And then Dr. Woog's Perio system was his second thing, because he went, you know, you can't just do another toothbrush. You got to do a system at that point.
Yeah, you do. It's the only place to go, right? Yeah.
Exactly correct.
All right, so tell us about your novel that's publishing soon, right? Publishing June 1st.
Yep, published on June 1st. So this is called The Conjurers, and it's available on Amazon. And The Conjurers is a historical fantasy, and there's actually a lot of what I write, is a historical fantasy. I don't know. I studied history when I was in college. It was something that I found fascinating, and I just love fantasy. And so that combination I liked, and it was purely a work of passion. I enjoyed doing the research for it because, again, I'm sort of like a history geek. So, you know, I was reading spell books, literally the spell books that people would get, you know, burnt at the stake for having possessed. They're all online now and they're translated into English. It's amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, I was sort of like looking through those, and just as a lot of research that I thought, I personally had a great time sort of writing this book and, enjoyed it a lot. And I hope other people will enjoy it as well.
Yeah. So what was the harder part of it? Was it the research or the writing of it?
I don't know that there was really a hard part to it, honestly, because I enjoyed any writing of a novel is a hard endeavor because it's such a commitment.
I was about to be very sad that there was no hard part for you in writing a novel.
No, but I mean, like...
Make us feel all inferior. Yeah.
I wrote it in 3 days, by the way.
What's hard about novel writing?
It's hard in the way that all novels are hard to write. There just was nothing that was uniquely hard about writing this particular novel, because it was fun. And I think, for me, the writing... Whether it's a short story or it's a novel, it all does start with something that is a visual image for me. And in this case, it was for the story that I read at Spiller's, it was that sort of opening image of this sort of scene of destruction. And in the case of The Conjurers, it was also sort of the initial scene and the sort of the conflict that is taking place. And I, you know, I've thought about this a lot. I actually think that it is having grown up in a sort of an arts-oriented family where I literally used to be dragged, mind you, but to, you know, art openings all the time, and we'd look at paintings and et cetera. And I, you know, I really appreciate that upbringing now as I look back on it.
Yeah.
But it informed a lot of how I think. It just has a very sort of subtle backdoor kind of way of impacting my way of looking on the world and my way of writing. And so I typically start from a sort of a visual place and then go into the rest of the story. And it's a discovery for me because I don't know the rest of the story. I know just the initial image. So I kind of am deeply jealous when I hear of the authors who where it's the concept that comes to them, you know, the whole sort of story arc somehow like appears in their brain. I'm like, oh my God, that's what I need.
Right, right. So the image is just sort of the jumping off point then, and then it's a discovery process for you.
Yep.
Oh. You know, they probably both have their struggles. Like either way, I think I'm more of a concept person. Mm. Not to make you jealous, but...
too late.
So I heard Paul Mosher actually describe his method of writing. He said, you know, very often, like, you can't see the whole map in your head. You can only really see around, like, the next curve. And that's really all you need. You know, that'll keep you going.
Yeah, as long as you keep doing that. Yeah.
You get around that curve, and then you see the next curve, and you kind of keep going. But I tend to work oppositely. Like I don't sort of feel my way around in the dark like that. I wish that I could, because I want to see what could happen. But I invariably, like, whenever I go to write any kind of fiction, I start with a concept, and like, and then I struggle like hell for God knows how long to sort of flesh out that that concept in sort of some justifiable way and do justice to it. So it's really interesting to think that there might just be, you know, pros and cons. Like, no matter how you write, you probably think it's easier a different way.
I was just going to say, I feel like it's a grass is greener thing, because I hear you know, that you start with a concept. And to me, that is tremendously appealing. I would love to start with a concept.
Oh, it's hell on wheels, David. Oh, it's hell on wheels.
All right.
I would love to just put a piece of paper into a typewriter and not know what's going to happen next.
You'd like to be surprised by...
I want to be surprised by what my brain will produce, like, instead of knowing, having some vague idea before I start.
So just a quick question about historical obscene language. Mm. What's your...
Like you do.
Yeah, right. What's your favorite phrase or phrases?
Wow, there's a poser.
Well, can I... like volunteer one that I really like that I ran across. And
I feel like this is a leading question.
Well, no, just so
tell us what you're after, Brian.
Well, I am almost beshitten.
I love that.
Okay, good.
Yes. I absolutely love that line. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. That I think was, you know, I wrote a blog post where I talked about, you know, foul language in the Middle Ages, and I'm almost beshitten, I think, was actually literally in a child's handbook of things to talk about, right?
Oh my God.
You know, like, it's just, their sense of what was, you know, inappropriate was very, very different from ours. And, I actually remember in, Wolf Hall, there is a great line where one of the characters sort of in cursing basically says, by the like thrice beshitten shroud of, you know, Turin, I don't know what shroud it was, but I loved the way that the guy used it. I thought it was fantastic.
That is great. I'm a fan of that. Are you going to work that into your writing?
I don't know
if
it ever... I am now. I'm going to start with the concept, though.
You're going to start with the concept. Well, I think thrice be shit and shroud probably doesn't work so well, except in a historical context, right?
Okay. Well, there is that caveat then,
yeah,
I guess.
But it is a nice opening image.
Yeah. Boy, talk about a jumping off point.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, David. We really enjoyed hearing your short story here tonight. I think the crowd loved it as well. If we haven't said so already, if you were not fortunate enough to be in the audience to listen to it tonight, just listen to episode 24 of the podcast. That is the recording we did of your reading. And we want to thank you for taking part in Spillers number 4 and for being a guest on the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thank you, David.
It's a real pleasure.
All right, thanks, David.
Bye.